Sun feels good. Benediction of light. Except if you're in Thailand. And the sun feels too hot. It depends. And my first teacher, he was an American. 4 days ago he's died, but he said if the Buddha said, you've heard me say this, but if Buddha had one word he used the most, what was it? It depends. And so like this affects me differently than the other day with the clouds, right? And so that's the sense world. And the sense realm is sort of got a sweet in my mouth, that feels sweet. The sun feels good. And then the clouds, that feels kind of heavy. So we are sensitive beings. You know, we're very vulnerable in that way. We're very vulnerable. And obviously if we just depend on sense experience for our fulfillment, we're in trouble, especially as you get older. So we can certainly try to use sense experience to help each other so we can have beautiful art and beautiful architecture and cultivate gardens and make beautiful meals, and we can do all that, which can be very uplifting and generous and so on. So there can be beauty, and that can be kind of used skillfully. It can also be attachment. So if we don't have, so the example we had at Chithurst was we were planting out a forest, replanting a chestnut coppice, about 100 acres of chestnut, and we were replanting it. And we had a very good botanist helping us. So we planted out this forest, and the neighbor who wasn't very, he was an aesthete, he was a collector of rhododendrons, architect, in the most exquisite house. But he got upset because we planted the wrong trees, and he had a look at them. And they really loved boxwoods and lovely trees, but he was such an aesthete that he was addicted to a certain standard of beauty. So he was caught by the sense world, caught by his own preferences. So in the way we develop the Buddhist path is we have the conventional truth, and that's where we use life situations to try to make them moral and try to make them comfortable and peaceful and so on. And that's where we employ the whole sense of self. Right? That's where we say, I am Viradhammo, and I have my responsibilities, and I am 67 years old, and I hope someone gives me a lift back to the monastery, and so on and so forth. So that's where the sense of I is used. And I always repeat this because the teachings on anatta, or not self, are very much misunderstood if you don't understand that the Buddha was teaching both. He was teaching conventional truth, where we do use the sense of I, and then he was teaching, shall we call it, stream of consciousness, where we look at the stream of mental physical events as dependently originated. And that's where we have this teaching on dependent origination. And that's what replaces the sense of self in the second way, or transcendent way of looking at our experience. So I am, conventionally, I am Viradhammo, and I have my responsibilities in senior monk in the monastery. And within that, I have junior monks and so on who have good qualities and not so pleasant qualities. It's like having kids, I think. And then I'll have to point something out to someone, which I don't like to do. If I don't do it, it gets disastrous. You probably know if you've had kids. So that's the convention I live in. And if I don't honor that convention, if I don't say something, or I'm just lazy, whatever, I get the consequences. I get the social consequences. So that's Veerdhamma and his responsibilities. But within that also, there is stream of consciousness, and that arises and ceases, arises and ceases, arises and ceases, dependent on causes and conditions. So, and everyone's behaving themselves and praising me, and there's money in the bank and food in the larder. Great, great place. And then when, and this isn't very often, but if the latter is, you know, if it's like disharmonious and there's no money in the kitty and there's only soup and pepper or something like that, which has never happened, but there's only difficulties, then I don't like it. And it depends, right? But in stream of consciousness, that's the way it works. It's not right or wrong, it just is that way. It arises and ceases, arises and ceases. So the sense of self arises and ceases dependent on causes and conditions. So you can know the sense of self as a condition. And you can also be a person with responsibilities. So I'm also, you know, there is Veerdhamma as person, but there's also stream of consciousness which can be known. And that's where we use the term anatta, not self. Because anatta is a difficult, very difficult word, and if it's just used in some kind of unconnected way to life, it just doesn't make sense. Because there is an individual. My knees are not your knees, and my thoughts are not your thoughts, and your bank account is not my problem, fortunately, or whatever you want. So anatta is just a way of trying to look at, trying to find the place in your mind which is not dependent on causes and conditions. Conventional truth is trying to make causes and conditions stable so that you can do the second half. Right? So the conventional life is the method, and then the watching stream of consciousness is the liberating part. Right? So the goal isn't to have a perfect life, because that's impossible. But the goal also is not to dismiss it and say, oh, it's impossible to have a good life, so I might as well just get utterly stupid about life or something like that. No, there is a place for it. So like in a monastery, we have quite a, you know, strong discipline. We have rules, we have ways of admonishment. We have rules around admonishment. So like if I want to admonish someone, I have to check into my own mind. Do I know the Vinaya? Am I free from greed and aversion right now? Have I really checked out? Is this appropriate? What's the state of mind the person I'm about to admonish? There's a whole kind of series of things which one has to consider before admonishing. Then I have to ask permission. May I, you know, can I offer you some reflection right now? And then I can offer that admonishment if it's according to Vinaya. And I say, Venerable, you know, when you do that, that's against our tradition. I say to him, you know, Venerable, I don't just say, oh, Mr. Not Self, I wish you would, you know, it's like, then you, in the suttas, you see the Buddha, he just like really lays into some of the monks because they're being absolutely stupid. He says, you're being absolutely stupid. He doesn't say, there's no one doing anything stupid. Right? He actually says to them. And that's called Vinaya. But then, in the Dharma, in the suttas, it's always anicca dukkha anatta, it's not self. You know, these conditions arise and cease according to causes and conditions. So the emotion of anger is not self. It's individual, but arises when things are triggered to create anger in the mind. So conventionally, if I act out my anger with action or speech, I get reprimanded, whether I'm a junior monk or a senior, because that's not on. You can't do that. But no one's saying to me, Veerdhamma, you can't be angry. No one's saying that. Or that anger's wrong, even. Not even that. Just anger is dependently originated. So it depends. So that's what we replace in when we do the second part of the teaching, which is the transcendent part. We look at the, like thinking, say. Observe how when thought's being generated, how you think that you're the thinker. And you think that you shouldn't be thinking. I shouldn't be thinking so much. But thought is just generated by intention and habit. That's a hard one. That there's no thinker behind the thinking. That's a very difficult one. Seems like I'm the one that's thinking. But actually, if you just observe the nature flow of consciousness, the thinking just arises. You don't sit down at 2:15 and say, okay, Thoughts about what I'm going to do next week are going to come up at 2:30. You don't do that, do you? It just comes up. It comes up. And what comes up is it comes up what's been conditioned before. So if I'm an architect and I've been planning certain, I've intended to do certain things, those thoughts will come up. They're just from intentions. They come and they go. So it seems like a paradox, you know. Well, who's the guy that's planning the architectural buildings? It seems like a paradox, but you can live that paradox. You can be a self in the world, and you can also know flow of consciousness. You can do both. And one interesting, you can notice your own personality, can't you? You can notice the grumpy personality, the inspired personality, the cynical personality, the inspired personality. You can see types of thoughts coming forward from that type of personality. So if it's the doubtful personality, there'll be a doubtful self, won't there? You know, when that doubtful mood comes up, oh gosh, do I really know? Am I really doing this right? There'll be a sense of self, which will be dependent upon the type of mood. And then you know, something happened which it, you know, you get some kind of affirmation. You think, yeah, this is really great. I'm going, yeah, I'm doing well. Yeah, I'm a real cat's meow here. I'm a good guy. But that'll be dependent too. That'll be dependent on the mood. Not that they're right or they're wrong. And that kind of reflection begins to show you that even the sense of self is just a construct governed by thought and conditioned by emotions and moods. And you can know that. But the knowing is not a thought. And the knowing is not a self. The knowing is just the knowing. And that you can't get behind. Get behind the knowing. Dare you. Right? Hey, this, I'm going to get behind the knowing. You can't. That's the limit. Right? You can only be the knowing, we say. Yeah, be the knowing. Be the knowing of change. Be the knowing of dependent origination. And then you begin to kind of intuit what we mean by the unconditioned. So there's the awareness of the conditions as change opens your mind to the unconditioned. Because knowing isn't conditioned in that way. It's not salty, right? It's not frightened. It's not, you know, it's not hot or cold. It knows. And so that the reason we emphasize craving is because craving is always looking for qualities. But the knowing has no quality. It knows qualities. So all conditions, whether you have an exquisitely peaceful meditation or a chaotic and horrible meditation, you can know it. If you think that good meditation is exquisite and peaceful, then, and you think that chaotic meditation is bad, and that one is better than the other, seems that way, but you're in trouble then. Because you'll be trying to repeat the good guys and trying to get rid of the bad guys. But if you see that, like, a chaotic meditation is a chance to develop awareness, and a beautiful meditation is a chance to develop awareness, and that they happen in awareness, and that it's not the quality of pleasant or unpleasant supports the awareness, you begin to see what transcendent is about. And so quite often the challenge of being like with pain or discomfort in meditation is, yeah, but it's just this way, just to be with that, rather than seek a replacement or try to figure it out or try to get rid of it. And that's where the piece of the transcendence lies, in just knowing. So Mon Paulium, that reading, that's pretty over the top kind of powerful meditation experience, which you don't read about very often. But still, even within that, he just knows happiness and happiness. Now, all of us, when you hear that, yeah, I'd like some of that happiness, happiness and peace. But what was he doing? What was he doing? He says he just knew happiness is happiness. Peace is peace. He didn't get, oh, I've got it. I've got it. And he didn't create a self around it. I've got it now. And then the mind falls into dullness and restlessness. I found that interesting. And then constantly what he says, the practice is just the practice. So we live our conventional life the best we can, and that's the method. You know, that's the method of keeping the mind stable. So in terms of your meditation, try to find some, I would recommend, try to find an object, like Lompo Liem in his meditation, he's doing skeletons. You know, I tried skeletons and it didn't really work for me because I was pretty depressed and cynical. So, you know, contemplations of death just got me more down. It's all a rotten world, right? We're going to die. So I needed metta. I needed the heart chakra. That's where I needed to kind of go. I needed to develop, that helped me, say, not need, that really helped me to abide here as an object. So that's what I developed a lot. So like now, it's just to, before the sitting, I was stretching out the old knees on the my favorite posture. And just staying here for that last half hour, just as an object, you know, got to do something, right? So might as well hang out with the heart. And then you find, like the meditation isn't like just trying to get something and attain to anything. It's just this kind of simple abiding with natural things, which suits your character, I think. That's important, you know, that they suit your temperament. They're not forced on you by some other, by teacher or tradition. You think, yeah, that'd be a good place to abide with. So breath is the most common. Heart chakra, Lompo Liem does a visualization of death and skeletons. So do consider that, these two types of like meditation. One is object-oriented, where you can take an object of sense and stabilize the mind. Get good at that. Whether it's Tai Chi, movement, or breath, or whatever you like. Something that you can always return to. So you get a bit bored, turn to that. Get a bit restless, what should I do? Oh, look at the breath. Simple, you know, with no big agenda behind you. In a dentist's office waiting for the dentist to come, just oh, let's be with the breath or the heart, whatever. And then the other is the meditation on characteristic and the characteristic change, that you stabilize the mind by not attaching to anything. And that you do by noticing arising, ceasing. And you really notice it at the end of a thought. When you're meditating and your mind starts to wander into, you know, projections about the future, and then I cough or I say something, your knee hurts. So it comes a moment, doesn't it? Oh yeah. And then just the knowing. Just be the knowing, that's all. Just do that. Just keep doing that. Knowing, ah. Oh, planning. Just that. Just very, very simple. And that will begin to be what your attention, that will be the default mechanism of your psyche. The default mechanism of just knowing. Keep doing that, keep doing that. As opposed to trying to get rid of, trying to figure it out, trying to sort it out, do something else, replace it, compensate it, all the extra that we put onto it. And then as you do that, that knowing becomes, like Ajahn Chah would say, it's a drip, 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 and then the tap opens and it's a constant, like it's a highway. Because that you begin to see, that's your real home, that knowing. And then you bring that into ordinary life, don't you? At the committee meetings or traffic jams or whatever, flow of consciousness. That's what we're all doing, isn't it, constantly? So perhaps we could just do that heart practice the way I like to do it, just to kind of, there's nothing else to do this afternoon, right? So maybe just abide with the heart chakra for a while, see how that feels. Stretch your legs a bit if you want, and then we'll do some sitting. So perhaps just use the same kind of routine and just listen to sound. And that brings you into presence. And then ensure that the listening is a receptive quality, so you're not going out searching for a sound. So let the sounds just come. Receptive presence. So it's like you're home again. And notice how quickly, just in that kind of waiting posture, you can very easily start to wait for something, because the mind is always going out into objects. And there's a kind of tendency to move out into the objects of sound or thought. And now I'm just staying home, restful, at ease, listening. And then the body awareness. And this idea of letting something become conscious. So the base of the posture, pressure, touching the cushion, the chair, let that become conscious. So it's not like your eyes are sort of squeezing and you're looking for some sensation in the legs, but you're rather letting that become conscious, move into consciousness. So there's an allowing, a receptivity. And that's what we mean by stabilizing the mind in the present moment. Use your hands. So localize your attention at your hands. And let the sensations of the hands become conscious. And don't squeeze your eyes looking at your hands, as it were. And so you start to feel tingling and warmth and pressure, and your attention stabilizes with the object. And feel the whole body. Again, include your head, include your eyes in full body awareness. And notice that body sensations are in awareness. Perceive bodily sensations as in awareness. And then sound. Perceive sound as in awareness. So awareness as conscious space includes bodily sensations, includes sound. And this is the establishment of mindfulness and awareness, or mindfulness and clear knowing. You're present, you know what's going on. Then become conscious of breathing. Let the feelings of breathing come into consciousness. And localize your attention at the center of the chest. Feel the rising and falling of the chest. Welcome the in-breath and let go the out-breath. Stay centered at the chest. On the in-breath, introduce the image and name of a friend or a person you love or close to, so that when you think about them, it's easy to feel goodwill. If they're in distress, don't go to that, because then you'll worry. But just someone who, when you think of them or you imagine them, it's easy to feel kindness, goodwill. So I use Lompa Sumedho a lot. I use all kinds of people. But so if I say Lompa on the in-breath, just that word connects me to feelings of gratitude, kindness. So in-breath, Lompa, feel it at the center of the chest. On the out-breath, may you be well. Lompa, may you be well. So we're, as an object, we're choosing a heart center and a certain attitude, the attitude of goodwill. So let's do that with one person first. Stay with the name and image for the whole in-breath, but don't think about the person. Don't think discursively of the history you have with the person, just the name and the heart connection. So the name and image for the whole in-breath. So that sustains and calms the mind. So you're stabilizing awareness in the moment through the breath, through the body awareness at the heart. And then you're opening a sort of emotional heart through that connection of goodness you have with a person. Remember, you're not trying to manufacture some fantastic feeling of compassion, because that would be a form of anticipation. So it's not like trying to do something to get some beautiful, beautiful feeling. It's much more ordinary than that. It's just the name connects you to goodwill, and the breath stabilizes attention in the moment. And just keep doing it. Very simple exercise. And then after some time you choose another person. It's like the refresh button in the heart. So you imagine and name another person who, when you think of them, it's easy to wish them well. So say Ajahn Kusalo, right? On the in-breath, Kusalo, out-breath. May you be well. So the same exercise, different people. And so you're becoming conscious of the heart chakra. Then you can choose other people, but at some time you also find just naturally you don't want to name anyone. It's just nice to abide with the breath at the heart and just make conscious the chest area, just as an exercise in stabilizing and making alive that part of your being. So choose a few people and then experiment with that. But it still falls in the framework of non-becoming. It's just doing it for the sake of doing it. And then if some particular energy form keeps taking over, like say dullness, then obviously you have to pay attention to that, because the object doesn't keep you settled in the present moment. So you have to address the hindrance, figure out how it's coming up, like what Lumpur Liam with dullness. You have to look right at the hindrance. So with dullness, you usually use deep breathing and a strong spine, stretching. So it's a much more coarse kind of activity that you have to do to keep track of dullness as an object. But if that's not the case, just stay with the heart.